Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Brandon Rhodes, and we are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
We're covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles, and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communications, the internet.
And good beers.
Yeah, really good beer.
Yeah. Lest we forget to talk about the beer, we are drinking Hopworks' IPA and Hopworks' special IPA project. The name Powell is in there somewhere, but I forgot to write it down, so I forget. But either way, Hopworks does a good job. We're also in the studio with Chris Sanderson from Builder by Bike. Hello, Chris.
Howdy.
And Joshua DuPerry, returning guest from like a year and a half ago, right?
That's right.
That's a good long time, but also in to comment on heavy-duty stuff by bike. Hello, welcome back.
Thanks. Yeah, it's great to be here again.
Yeah. So we are here, and this, Brandon, this is like the very last episode before your impending departure.
Indeed.
But next week, we are going to do it up like crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, yeah. So I think we're going to rent a car to go, because neither you or I have done that yet.
Correct.
And we're going to ride the Portland Aerial Tram, because you haven't done that one yet?
Never been on the tram.
It's been like 5 years for me or something. So it's about time. And then anything else we can do. We thought about folding bikes, but we can't. The ones that I have are still rusted and cobwebbed and whatnot. So we'll do something.
And that'll be punctuated with beer and such.
That's right. There'll be beer to be had by all, especially you and I.
Yes.
Actually, probably mostly by you, because I'll be driving the car to go.
At the beginning, anyway. Yeah.
That's right. So I'll make up for that later. So that's that's coming up. It was a good week. We've been moving.
Mm-hmm.
Moving from house to house. And this is the smallest move. I was telling somebody recently that basically every move that I've made in my life has been in incrementally shorter distances. So the last move is from like 3 or 4 blocks away at the apartments down on 92nd Avenue. And now the move from this house where we are currently recording to the new house that we'll be living in is simply behind the house.
Without a backyard.
It's like a 200-foot move or less.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
So it's good. And you've been busily configuring wireless networks all week.
Yes, I've been calibrating all sorts of router, what have yous.
And, yeah. Have either of you, Chris or Joshua, have you guys ever done a move by bike?
No. Kind of. Yes. When I was in San Francisco, I had everything stored at the place where I used to work. And I had to ride everything from the dog patch up the hill back into kind of Haight-Ashbury area.
Okay.
And I actually recruited a bunch of people to help me out with that. It was a lot of work.
That sounds intense.
Yes.
And San Francisco is not a flat place.
No.
So there's there's a lot of struggling and straining to be done to get your things from one place to another, no matter where you're going, I suppose.
Well, it depends. If I was riding along the Embarcadero, not a big problem. But
right.
But it was going back up the hill towards Golden Gate Park, which was...
That's up a little, right?
Yeah, it was up.
That's good times. And I'm trying to think of if there's anything else notable that's happened in the past week for you or I, Brandon.
I got a dog.
You got a dog.
Yes.
So the old dog, because last time you mentioned a dog on the podcast...
Indeed.
It was...
Penny.
Penny.
Penny Lane. Mm-hmm. She did not care about anything. She was a nihilist. And I found some Nietzsche in her cage. She reading the Antichrist, which is really weird. Like, why would you read late Nietzsche? Anyway, she she didn't care about anything. Like, not affectionate at all. We thought that she would her personality would blossom between Humane Society and settling in, and never happened. So felt very sad, felt bad about returning her. But I wrote in the notes a lot of clarifying lessons so that way she'll be in the right house.
Yeah. And you wrote like a voluminous tome.
Yeah. Well, 4 paragraphs, which is longer than the like 4 words that was in her file previously. So yeah, we drove up to Yakima yesterday and got Cedar, mm-hmm. who has been abandoned twice, but it doesn't seem to have phased him. The last time he was found was at a bus stop.
Wow.
Out on the outskirts of Yakima, like in the woods. Wow. So it's kind of cool. It was waiting for the bus.
Yeah, that's a Sprocket podcast themed dog, right?
Yeah, exactly.
There.
So I wanted to name him TriMet.
All that transit, yeah.
Max.
Max. That's a perfect name for a dog.
Bart. If yeah.
Right, right. I like it. Well, anyways, we're looking forward to getting to know this dog. Yeah, and I'm not a big dog person. I think I said this last time.
You're a little dog person.
Well, I'm not much of a dog person at all. But both of the ones that you brought home have seemed to be like the things that I dislike about dogs are not present in the dogs that you bring home. So you have a 2-for-2 track record
Thank you.
On that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that'll work out actually pretty well.
Yeah, his only flaw is he does shed, but we just got a furinator or something like that.
Furinator.
It's a undercoat rake.
Really?
Gets rid of all that dead hair, so it like cuts down on shedding by like 90%.
Could you hook that up to a Flobee?
What the fuck is that?
A Flobee? Yeah.
The Flobee is like the vacuum cleaner and barber tool all in one, I think.
That's awesome.
I think Dr. Jeff mentioned that last time he was here. Basically, like, yeah, you just, you know, you roll it over your head and you've got like the perfect length of hair because the vacuum is pulling your hair off of your head.
Wasn't this in Wayne's World?
It probably was.
It certainly does suck.
Yeah. It seems like a good idea. I've been considering because, I mean, you know. But there's something to be said for getting a good haircut at a barber, too. Do either of you two have a barber that you prefer?
Yes. Yeah, I have a stylist at Bishop's.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the sexiest barber shop in town.
Yeah. Well, it's just right over by my house.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, she's great.
Nice.
Her name's Emmy, and she does a great job, and I'm very particular.
Mm-hmm.
I actually just got my hair cut for the purpose of my Halloween costume.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And what is Joshua DePerry going to be for Halloween, or is that a CAA surprise?
No, it'll be, I'm announcing it now.
There we go.
To the public for the first time.
You heard it first here, folks.
Tony Montana.
Really?
Oh, nice.
Well done, sir. Awesome. Well done.
So say hello to my little friend.
that's fantastic. As it should be. Well, and I mean, yeah.
You can have like 2 Tommy guns or what?
No, he had the grenade launcher machine gun. I wish I could find something like that, but yeah, I just got to find a fake.
Airsoft or something.
Yeah, 45. Those are hard to find, except for Andy and Bax.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
True. You can find almost anything at Andy and Bax.
That's true.
I actually made a set of panniers out of some bags that I purchased from there, just like old military style bags. And added some hardware, and my friend Aaron Flores is now rolling those on his bike as his everyday panniers. So
nice.
Yeah. Well, should we get to some news?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. Is the internet working? We've been having problems with that.
I have it cached.
So, okay. Good so times. Good. A good caching will
cache,
fend off. Yeah.
Cached.
Yeah.
Cached.
You can sachet right on over those notes. Okay. Here they are. Oh, local Portland band Hurtford.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Pedal just as fast as we can into the morning light. Pedal just as fast as we can into the daylight. Pedal just as fast.
All right, first up, by way of Bike Portland, Spinlister makes peer-to-peer bike sharing a reality in many cities.
That's right.
It says here, Spinlister is an online service that lets you list your bike for rent. Now the service is out of beta mode and is officially launched, and folks in Portland are wasting no time putting it to use. There's over 500 bikes for rent in the whole system, and owners can make up to $150 a week.
Yeah, this is like the equivalent of GetAround, which GetAround is the peer-to-peer car rental service in which if you own a car and you're willing to share it with people, you can rent it out for usually cheaper than anyone else would rent a car for. So Spinlister is doing the same thing, but with bicycles. And
amazing.
Yeah, I never considered that I would need something like that in town. But say, for example, you're going to Boston, as I sometimes do, or another American city in which you might want to get around with a bicycle, but you don't have one. Spinlister can hook you up.
Nice.
Or if you need to use a particular utility bicycle.
That's right. If you don't have one. Mm-hmm.
You don't want to spend the couple grand on it.
Yeah. Or let's say hypothetically that someone had a tall bike, which also carried cargo, made by Tom Labonte of TomsCargoBikes.com.
Do we know anybody like that, Brock?
Oh, there might be a guy around.
Never even heard of such a thing.
No, but my tall bike is now listed on Spinlister. Oh, so, I'm kind of curious how that would work out. I'm not sure if anybody would be interested in renting a tall bike or not.
How much does it cost to rent Brock Dittus's tall bike?
I think it was $15 a day, something like that.
That's fair.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I'm not below lowering my prices. I would rent it for much less than that if someone needed to, you know. So maybe I should do that. Maybe I should just make it like $5 a day. Mm-hmm. I suppose there's probably a quality margin at some point where, like, if you put the rental too low, people are not esteeming the bike at a high enough. I don't know. But who
I know
knows?
What you're saying.
Yeah, you know, like if you're only renting it for pennies on the dollar, then you're like, oh, I can beat this thing up. But yeah, I did carry some cargo on my tall bike just the other day. Yeah. We have a new bicycle mounting system in the garage that we just finished last night, and I brought the 2x4s home on the cargo rack on the bottom of the tall bike.
Well done.
The one thing that I neglected to do, and Chris, you may have some experience in this, is putting a red tag on the back so that.
Did you get in trouble?
I did not get in trouble, but I got called out by Dave Knows PDX on Twitter because I put the picture up, and we love Dave Knows. He's the guy that put together the TriMet Storytelling Night back, mm-hmm. and there's actually another one of those coming up in like a month.
I've got to admit, I've never put a red flag on my lumber off of my trailer. Really? I don't know if I'm breaking the law by doing that, but I thought that was just a car only thing, but
right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of gray area.
There is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Dave actually sent me the, there's a link to the Oregon law, I think. because Dave knows Portland.
So there is something in Oregon law about.
Well, yeah, I think if you're carrying cargo that extends beyond the back of the vehicle, you have to have a red flag on the back so that someone coming up behind you doesn't get caught unawares.
But is a car a vehicle?
A car is a vehicle.
I'm sorry, is a bike a vehicle?
A bike is a vehicle. Well, if you talk to Jonathan Moss at bikeportland.org, he's particularly fond of reminding us that it should be the Department of Vehicles, not the Department of Motor Vehicles, because there are a lot of people out there riding around, driving around. Not everything's motorized.
That's right.
So I think that's a gray area. I don't know that you or I, Chris, are breaking the law, but we may not be well within its bounds either.
I'd be included on that as well.
But have either of you guys ever been rear-ended by anyone with cargo protruding from your rack?
In San Francisco, I actually was.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, on Cesar Chavez in San Francisco, I was I got some material for a job at the marketing agency where I was working at, and someone actually love bumped me on the back. Yeah,
is that what they call it?
I think so. It was, you know, it's just, you know, definitely a great town for love down there. But anyway,
that's right.
But anyway, yeah, I got a little love tap, and I turn around and they were looking at me like, oh, sorry, but it was crazy. I don't know if a red flag would have really prevented that or not.
Right, like they weren't paying attention to begin with. So
to the cyclist in front of them,
mm-hmm.
with the trailer, yeah. So
yeah.
That didn't draw attention or anything like that. So
it's a story that's all too common.
Yeah.
Things happen. You have not been bumped, Joshua?
No, never. I've carried 10-foot sticks of pipe on the back of my bike numerous times and trailer as well.
No one impaled?
No.
That's good.
Not so
that's
far.
Good. Yeah.
There are some really bad stories about plumbers, so particularly when they carried copper pipe. In vans, why you never carry long sticks of copper pipe inside your van.
Oh. Oh, my.
Particularly where there, this has happened a couple of times, where there's copper pipe behind the driver's seat. The guy comes to a sudden stop and gets killed by the copper pipe going through his skull.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Kind of like in No Country for Old Men. That sort of thing.
That sort of
like
thing.
Out of wow. Damien Omen or something like that. Or
yeah. Wow,
Omen.
So you got to be very careful about that.
Yes.
So anyway, Spinlister rents bikes that are privately owned, and you can do this in many places across the country. The one catch right now is that you have to list your own bike for rent before you can rent somebody else's, which might be kind of like couch surfing or something.
I see.
I think there's arrangements in that. Kind of like that. But yeah, it's not a bad way to go. And I mean, you know, I suppose if you didn't want to rent your bike out, you could always put the rental fee so high that no one would ever choose it. It's like a 1970s Schwinn for like $100 a day. So yeah, anyways, that's kind of cool.
All right, next up. Also from Bike Portland, Builder Tom Labonte introduces The Hydro Feet to Portland. This is a cool thing.
Yeah, yeah. Have you seen this?
Classy.
Yeah. And both
for being
of you,
a big
I suppose,
advertisement, it's cool.
I've probably also seen this around at one point or another.
Well, we have. I have.
Yeah. And it looks like it's just been completed, so I don't know which events it has been to, but yeah.
Just in time for fall.
That's right, yeah. Ethan Jewett is the guy that he was in charge of the disaster relief trials, in part, working with Transportland. Mm-hmm. And we still need to get him in sometime to talk, but met him in person. He's a very nice guy. But yeah, he's trying to get rid of disposable plastic water bottles and that sort of thing and cut down on waste.
Excellent.
And also offer clean water so it's not just like, you know, you're not taken out of the stream or whatever at whichever event that you happen to be at. So this, in true Tom Labonte style, is just a gloriously beautiful bike. And it even has a Brooks saddle on it, I think, which is pretty cool.
It is nice.
Yeah. But he makes amazing machines. This one even has, I believe this is the number 59 little plate.
Yeah, that nameplate is really, really classy.
I did not get one of those on mine. I'm kind of jealous.
I think he stepped it up a little bit.
Probably so, yeah. Yeah, but, you know, good times.
And he lives here in Lentz, doesn't he?
He does. I'm not sure if he's moved or not. I remember I went past his place a couple weeks ago, and it kind of looked like it was empty, but maybe that was just like, you know, his tidy
up. His basic aesthetic.
Could be, yeah. There was no big pile of bikes out front, which sometimes there is because people come by for scrap metal and that sort of thing. He's right here in Portland and making bikes on his own out of old bikes, you know, and whatever other metal is sitting around. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good looking bike.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Next up from Bicycle Touring Pro, Darren Alf?
Alf, yeah.
Gets more than he bargained for on Romanian roads. Oh, geez.
Yeah. So, Darren, we've had him on the show. I think he was on last summer. And I'm going to be talking to him again because he's had a fantastic trip so far across Europe, starting in Iceland and riding around. Basically, Iceland is like, you know, I mean, it's a beautiful place, but I always think of it as just being like flat and brown. And a lot of the places he rode were kind of like that. But he started there and he's been on the road now for several months and he's planning on a 6-month tour. Before he eventually returns home to Park City, Utah. And this was kind of fun because he's got some pictures on the story here. You can read the full details at bicycletouringpro.com. But he was kind of in Romania, moving from one town to another on this really kind of gross road that was really muddy. And maybe all of us have had this happen at some point where like you're rolling through mud and the mud accumulates on your tires until eventually it gets stuck between the tires and the fender and you cannot roll it anymore.
I have not had that happen.
Me either.
So
that is gross.
Yeah, yeah. Impressive. So he's got a very, just all that shit just like stuck in there, you know, and the rest of the bike is very
like
clean.
It's like his fender is constipated. It's mm-hmm. disgusting.
Yeah, very much so. But
sorry.
He ended up clearing the mud out and proceeding, and he had to do it like 3 times before he got to a place that was dry enough and clean enough to ride without fender maintenance. So that was pretty intense. Later on, sorry.
I was going to say, I think that happened to my bike when I was a kid, my BMX bike. My Sears BMX bike. Mm-hmm. I think I had mud cake up on that thing when I was a kid in Colorado somewhere.
Yeah. Did you have fenders on that, Chris, or was it a...
No, actually, it would have caked up on the fork.
The stays, right. Yeah. And it was just like, yeah, until finally it can't move.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it kind of clayish?
I don't remember.
Or just, yeah, I suppose it's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry to press for details. The other exciting thing that happened in Romania for Darren was some of the roadways that he was riding on. This is kind of, you can't quite see all the detail in this picture, and you guys are also across the room. But right here, basically, it was almost like war zone material where like there were enormous potholes and some of the pavement had sunk down into bottomless pits of water. And it was just kind of exciting. You know, he's out there to have a good time and not really particularly on any schedule except his own. And so he was saying he kind of enjoys this because he likes the technical aspect of navigating on the smoothest parts of the road and avoiding the rocky areas.
Passing through the dead marshes. Unquote.
Yeah, exactly.
Did he take his own bike out there? Is he renting a bike or what?
I believe
Spencer
he is using
in Romania.
I think he's using a Co-Motion Pangea right now, made down in Eugene. And this is his first tour with the Pangea, so he's given it a shot. But apparently, it sounds like it's worked out pretty well, and so far his reviews have been favorable. So yeah, I still need to try Co-Motion sometime. I know that Co-Motion makes those wonderful detachable tandems where you can like stick the bike together.
Wow.
And then you can also disassemble it and put it into a box for travel by train or air or something like that. Yeah. That's if I'm not mistaken, Joe Kermaski, the Metal Cowboy, initially was going to use EcoMotion for his triple tandem, but they ended up reconfiguring that whole thing because a triple tandem gets to the point where it's just all bowy and flexy and doesn't hold together. So anyways, yeah, good times. Is that the end of our news?
That is it.
We have finished it.
As far as the Google Docs.
A lot of responsibility in owning and riding a bicycle. You are now an operator of a wheeled vehicle.
The Google Doc knows all.
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, hey, let's introduce, we'll give you guys a fanfare, because would you like, I have a gong or a kind of a royal fanfare. Which would you prefer, Chris?
The gong.
Okay, here we go. So I give you now, Chris Sanderson, owner and proprietor of Builder by Bike, LLC. Good to have you, sir.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me here. Appreciate it.
And then Joshua DePerry, returning guest. Now it's called Plumbing by Bike, formerly St. Francis Plumbing, I believe.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll give you one of these as well.
Absolutely.
We had both of you guys in. You've had a couple great write-ups, Chris, on Bike Portland of what you've been doing, because you're doing something rather unconventional. It's construction, like full-on construction by bike.
Right. Yeah, I'm doing probably, I would say, smaller projects, although someone asked me about a two-car garage.
Nice.
And that one, I don't know, I left that with the architect. So there's an architect by bike. Actually,
really,
a friend of mine named Ethan, who claims to be an architect by bike. So, but he does.
Wait, is it questionable that he's an architect, or questionable that he's by bike?
By bike. Okay. No, actually, it's not questionable. He's pretty true about
he's
riding.
He's got SketchUp, so it's
he's not having to haul a bunch of stuff around except drawings and everything. But so anyway, that I've kind of left that with him because that's going to the city and trying to find out permits and so on and so forth, which I've not been dealing with much, especially when it gets that. But I've been doing a lot of smaller projects. But my last big project was a rebuilding a column for a pergola in a house in the Hollywood area, which was a lot of fun.
Nice. And, so explain a pergola. That's something that I don't know.
A pergola is it's kind of like, it's got the timbers up above, but there's no roof on it, and it's kind of a an outdoor thing that you could grow a vine up on and make a nice shady viney area. But that was actually the problem, is that this vine grew up into a column and actually caused it to rot. And so we actually pulled down some 4.5 by 9.5 by 13.5 feet timber pieces, and actually when I was pulling it down, one actually broke.
Wow.
It was so rotted, it was bad. And so that was a pretty big project, hauling a lot of lumber over there, and cedar siding that I put up on there and whatnot. I specialize in small projects, but I'm actually taking on larger projects
incrementally
as they come. It's kind of been a challenge to myself. It's like, how much can I handle, and I've actually stepped up with a beefier trailer. I got in touch with Bikes at Work out of Ames, Iowa. They sent me a 8 feet long, 30 inch wide with dually wheels on the back.
Dually's on a bike trailer.
So it increases the weight capacity to 600 some odd pounds. And then, if you throw a bunch of weight on there, and then, the Yuba Mundo that I have, can actually handle 450 pounds. There's a potential of 1,000 pounds. But the question is, can these calves, can they pull that?
Are you man enough?
Yeah. I'm actually looking into, possibly putting an Eco Speed on the Yuba to help with some of those hills. I borrowed a bike from Joel Grover and had an Eco Speed on it over at Splendid Cycles. The lights kind of went off in my head, or went on in my head. Shouldn't say it went off. Everything.
It took a nap. Blacked out there for a couple hours.
Everything kind of dinged, and so it's putting in the investment and into doing that, so we'll see what happens.
Right. You know, but, and this is an electric assist for the bicycle?
That would be an electrical assist for the Yuba.
Right, yeah. When you're dealing with 1,000 pounds of person and cargo is probably...
If I were to travel with 1,000 pounds, I think probably the most I pulled was actually for a project which wasn't too far from here for Brian Wilson.
And the Brian Wilson?
Not from the Beach Boys. Okay. Brian Wilson, activist.
Oh, that's somebody you should have on your show.
Yeah, you should.
Is that the guy that does the hand cycling?
Yes.
Yeah.
Vietnam War vet.
I remember reading about him.
Activist.
Yeah.
He's a pretty cool guy.
Yeah, and I could put you in touch with him if you'd like.
Yeah. That would be cool. Yeah, because he had a book release about a year ago, something like that.
Yeah, Blood on the Tracks.
Yeah, okay. I've read it. Yeah, it's excellent.
Yeah. And I think I've seen him from time to time over on Flavel Street, just a block away from us here.
Yeah.
And also, I think I may have seen him at the train station downtown at Union Station.
It's likely.
When I was arriving home from something that I was doing. So, yeah.
He prefers train travel.
Nice.
Yeah.
We got to talk to this guy.
Yeah, oh, yeah. He's a good guy.
Checking off all the boxes.
Exactly.
So I had a load from Sustainable Northwest Timber down on kind of a Division Street area. If I remember, is it Division or... a lot of cedar wood that I pulled up for a big fence project that I was working on, and had to stop by and pick up 100 pounds of sand and throw that on there as well. And that's when I didn't have that's when I had my homemade trailer. I have a trailer that I made out of a computer server rack.
Oh, really?
And I got some parts from Bikes at Work and kind of turned it into a trailer. Now, my employee actually has that bike trailer now, and he's using it for his jobs.
There we go. Yeah, you were hiring, and I think
yes. I
think that might have been one of our news items a couple of weeks ago.
That was amazing, because when that came up, I actually had Channel 8 News call me up, and they called me up, and they said, yeah, we want to do a story. We heard that you're hiring, blah, blah, blah. Can we come over? And I said, sure. When do you want to do that? And they said, can we be there in an hour? And I'm like, I had to get in touch with the owner of the house and make sure that was okay. And they came out and did that and said, he's hiring. And it was pretty
good times.
Great. It was pretty crazy. But
high visibility. Yeah.
So, wow. So my new employee, Joel, Shelley, who's, he owns, his own business, Spoketown Cargo.
Okay. Oh, this guy. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Joel,
he has the really nice, wraps Joel. And package. Yeah. And you know him as well, Joshua. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have him part time for about 20 hours a week, so to say.
Very nice.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen the Splendid Cycles, I'm sorry, not the Splendid Cycles. That was the one that gave you the electric, loaner.
Right.
And
and Joel has a Bullet.
Oh, he does. Okay.
Himself, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause he's got a wrap on there that makes it look kind of like classy or something. The cargo sits in the Bullet has that flat platform.
You can mount
whatever box you want on there.
Yeah. He's got one of those big aluminum boxes on there. He can throw a whole bunch of shit in there.
Yeah. So. And it has the curves that kind of just make you think of like an old 1950s vehicle or something. Like it's got some class, some style to it. So I see him pedaling around town from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's with me now, so it's good to have him on board. He's
nice.
He's a great guy.
Yeah. Brandon, do you have a story of hauling materials of any kind?
Yes, unfortunately. When I first moved to Portland, I lived in Irvington, and I went to school off of Glisson and 85th. Yeah, proper pronunciation.
That is technically
of man's Glisson? Name. Yeah,
technically.
Glisson?
No.
Oh.
Or Glisson. Yeah, Glisson. Yeah, like.
Wow.
The adjective or the verb. Verb. Anyhow, I wanted to go to Winco, which is a little further out, like 112th or something. And I had my new Kona Do with a decent mid-range rack, but then the collapsible baskets on the side. And I was like, all right, here we go. Like Hurricane Katrina just happened. I'm going to get me some canned food. You have strong opinions about stupid things when you're 21. And I was going to get a bunch of canned food from Winco, and I filled up two grocery bags full and tried to carry that much, plus like a 10-pound bag of rice.
Mm-hmm.
And
canned food is dense. Yeah,
I climbed up this like overpass going over 205 and came down and could feel the whole back of it beginning to wobble harder and harder and harder. And it's like there's no shoulder there and I'm like in traffic and I peel out at the bottom of the hill and my rack is completely ripped open.
Oh my.
And it just so happened a friend of mine was in the area and could give me a ride home. But yeah, don't go to fucking Winco with like $15 racks.
There you go.
Yeah.
Lesson learned.
Yeah. Make multiple trips.
Yeah.
And know the flattest way to get there, because going 25 or 30 down a hill with that much shit on cheap racks. Yeah, I learned my lesson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you kind of feel invincible, though. Like, when you first get started, I'm curious for either of you, Joshua or Chris, your first experience is hauling cargo, just because that's kind of like it's imbued into what you both do in your own professions now. When you first started riding a bike with, like, you know, panniers or whatever, did you have, like, overloading situations?
Yeah, plenty.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just absolutely. What you do. And a big part of it is your speed, just watching your speed, knowing that if you're carrying a lot of extra weight, you know, you're vulnerable to that sort of scenario happening. Any kind of, you know, speed just increases your risk. So I'm always taking it slow. If I've got a lot more weight, I'm going to, well, you know, usually by virtue of the speed that I can pedal anyway, but if I'm going downhill, work the brakes. And that's why disc brakes are ideal.
Right, yeah, and disc brakes are—they're starting to make their way onto road bikes now. It's something mm-hmm. that hasn't traditionally been there, but people are learning that. I guess you know rims overheat, and if you're relying on your brakes a lot, your rims can sometimes fly apart.
Ounce counting isn't everything. It's good to have those.
Right, yeah, like you can limit your weight sometimes, but sometimes you want something that's actually utilitarian as well. And so, yeah, if you have the equipment that can deal with that.
Well, and in the long term, it's you know. It's better for your cost. I mean, you wear out those
pads fast.
Yeah, the pads really fast. I had a job in the West Hills up on Skyline.
That sounds terrifying, Chris.
There must have been a premium on that job.
Yeah. It was coming down. I would go down Fairview, if I remember correctly, you know, and I would get away with bringing the Yuba on Max and never got in trouble and take it up to the zoo and then like a 10-minute ride from there. But coming back,
You could fit that in on the Max elevator. It's a big elevator, I suppose.
Yeah.
Sweet. This is technically against the rules for TriMet, but
it's taking it on the Max.
But they're not like super vigilant about that at all times.
Yeah. I actually been in there with some, you know, a lot of crap on the bike and I didn't get in trouble. It was just really short. But anyway, I wore through brakes really fast. And so I went over to Joe Bike and they threw on the largest disc brakes you can buy for a bike. And,
approaching like motorcycle style.
They're pretty big. Yeah. But I also learned that, it's like, you know, you're not going to wear away the wheel. The disc brake pads they last longer and they're less expensive to replace than the pads. And so it's in the long term, it's actually better for, you know, your money.
Right.
Yeah.
And I suppose if you're also like truing a wheel each time you replace the rims, that if you're having someone else do that, it can get expensive. And if you're doing it yourself, it just takes time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. For you, Joshua, you don't usually roll with a trailer, do you? Or do you?
No, not typically. Yeah. I carry significantly less than Chris. My hat's off to this guy. He contractor's totally different. But I carry a significant amount of weight on the bike itself. I recently switched to a new bike. I now have the Surly Big Dummy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Those are great.
Yeah. Oh, that's an excellent bike. I am very happy with it.
Yeah. Brandon, do you remember the folks that came by last summer, the Pedal Powered family?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They had the Big Dummy, and they had built the full on like double child seat onto the back rack. It was kind of a homemade, mostly wooden contraption, I think. But yeah, those things can carry a lot of weight.
Yeah, it really can, and it carries the weight better than any bike I've had that I've tested so far.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great bike.
Going around the room and telling stories about overloads would not be complete without Brock, you telling the story of you moving to the apartments.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So we were, just in brief, we were moving from, living on 72nd Avenue and Duke Street. And our friends had offered us a bed. It's not the one we still have. I thought for a minute it was, but I think I bought a new one since then. But it was this bed that was kind of in a garage, and I said, hey, it's free. Let's use it. So we have the enormous trailer. It was built by Brian, I can't remember his last name now. Someone mentioned it. Brian, Super the guy. Brian. Yeah, Super Brian, the Rasta man. He builds the bicycle RVs, and perhaps have either of you heard of this guy or seen him around?
I've heard of him, yeah.
I met him, actually.
Yeah? You yes. have? Okay, yeah.
A legend.
Yeah. He's amazing. He's really, really sharp at putting together these enormous human-powered vehicles. And so he built a trailer for one of our friends, and we were using that.
It's about the size of a flatbed for a car or a truck.
Yeah. Would you say it's like...
It's 4x8.
4x8, yeah. So.
Maybe 4x, longer.
Yeah. Sheesh. Pretty big. And it's all made of basically like sheet metal, like aluminum and whatnot. It's not like it's not a pretty machine, but it's very functional. So we were loading the mattress and the box spring onto this thing to carry it about 5 blocks, like from where they live down 85th over to the apartments on 92nd Avenue. There's a tiny little hill in here, and anybody who has done the Sunday Parkways would have traveled that little hill.
On Knapp Street, on between 87th and 92nd.
And you don't even notice the hill if you're not like, if you're just on a regular bike, it's nothing to speak of. But if you're carrying a large mattress and box spring on the trailer.
And your wife is riding bull on the...
Yeah, so here's the thing. Number one, never use your wife for ballast. We were loading the mattress and box spring on, and we couldn't get it to fit over the wheels and lay flat on the trailer. We didn't really have the ropes and whatnot to strap it down vertically onto the trailer. And so I just set it on the back end of the trailer. All the weight is on the back, and the tongue is sticking up in the air like crazy. Oh, no. And so I'm like, how can we remedy this? Adele, sit there. So that was my first mistake. We roll down the street, and I can start to feel that kind of the shimmy thing. Like I feel the weight is starting to kind of take control of the vehicle, and I'm starting to lose control. And instead of doing the smart thing and stopping and trying to figure out how to remedy the situation, I figured, we can ride it out. So we cruise down the hill on Knapp Street, and you feel the fishtailing start to happen. I think our friend's dog, Bailey, was chasing us as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, as those dogs do from time to time. So
not my dog.
Not your dog, thankfully. So we end up doing not quite an endo, but something
similar. It was sort of like that Batman, like flipping the semi-truck situation going on, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. It was very much like that. So wow.
It was exciting.
We hit the jackknife point where the trailer ends up pushing the bike's tail end out from underneath me. Adele bails, I bail. The entire contraption like flips over, and I think we ended up jacking up the rear wheel of the bicycle, at least one of the wheels of the trailer, and maybe some pieces. The mattress and box spring, for whatever reason, were fine. So.
Sounds chaotic.
Yeah, it was the worst thing.
Must have been a hell of a noise, like bending metal and scraping.
It was, yeah. And so basically, we ended up carrying the mattress and box spring, you know, from where they landed at the bottom of the hill. The rest, like the one more block over to where our apartments were.
You were that close.
Yeah, yeah. But
30 blocks.
The trailer and the bike couldn't even be moved because the wheels were so fucked up. So, anyways, that was an intense experience. And
thank you for telling that story, Brock.
Don't care to repeat it. So there you go. But a lot of that has to do with improper loading and not having the right material, the right stuff.
The question I have is, so like, when do you realize you've loaded poorly and you need to readjust or remove things? Is it like once you get some speed, or it's pretty quick?
Well, for me, it's if there's a lot of weight on the tongue, because mm-hmm. A lot of the weight on the tongue, you can actually feel it more mm-hmm. on the bike. But I feel what works for me is if you get more weight balanced on the axle.
Okay.
Then it's not such a big deal. You know, it actually pulls...
The trailer is doing its own job.
Yeah, the axle carries a lot of that weight. I think I think where I've seen, you know, kind of done a no shit moment is, you know, where the tires are squashed down so much. I actually had a tire explode on me on one project.
Oh, wow.
And that yeah, it was for a fence project. I grabbed a whole bunch of cedar fencing and everything else and just overloaded it. And so that was the biggest problem. But I've never had a – people have told me about the jackknifing stuff, and I've never had something like that happen to me. So I guess I'm doing something right. But as much as you can get, as much weight as you can get over that axle, I'll go to like Mr. Plywood and pick up stuff, and they'll help me unload, you know, from the big red thing that you're pushing around there. And I'm always having to tell them no. And I have to scoot 2x4s and 4x4s back over the axle, because I tell them I need more weight centered over that axle than on the tongue.
Right.
How are you transporting things in the rain, like some of the wood and things like that? You're not going to want getting all that wet, do you?
So on my one trailer, so I just got this other trailer from Bikes at Work last weekend, and I haven't had a chance to do anything to it to weatherize it. My other trailer, I have three PVC pipes.
Oh, great.
That I loop over and
so
then
it's like a garden bed cloche kind of thing.
Yeah. And then I went to the Cloth World or whatever it is on Stark and 120th and bought.
Oh
some,
yeah, that place
yeah,
is huge.
Yeah. I bought some ripstop nylon and sat down one night and got my sewing machine out and sewed together a canopy. So it looks like kind of a covered wagon.
Very nice.
And everything.
You could sell advertisements on it.
I could. I just don't. I need to find someone who can screen print on ripstop nylon. I haven't. I need to put like my business name on there, and everything's just been a little crafty here. I may just have to like throw money at it and say, hey, someone do this, and you know. But up to this point, everything is like. I mean, I got little signs on my trailer that I spent 8 hours tracing from, you know, shooting an overhead projector onto a wall and putting the sign up there and tracing my logo.
It looks great.
And sitting there and painting with black paint, you know, on the front porch, and just, you know, it's all been that. And now I'm kind of getting to the point where I just need to throw money at it. And,
right.
You know, Bike Punk has helped me with T-shirts and stickers, and I may need to go to them for some signage.
Yeah, Bike Punk made our stickers, and they're amazing. They do a great job.
Yeah, good folks.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to try and get them on here at some point, but we haven't. We've
one
never.
Day.
Yeah, someday soon.
Tell us about stickers.
How do they work?
Well,
exactly. I'm curious, like, if you've got this ripstop nylon set up, have you ever considered going camping with it?
I have actually. It's you know, well, a lot of people say, oh, you can camp underneath that. I like to split, you know, just, you know, sprawl out as much as I can, but in a sleeping bag, I don't know if I want to sleep on my bike trailer at night. It just seems too confining. And it's funny, you know, it's like most of the people that give me the thumbs up on the bike trailer are, or where I get the most response are from like little kids. And then,
right,
you know, people who are homeless and they're like, yeah, that's great. It's a great trailer, you know? And I think there's a lot of possibility for multi-use on that trailer, both professionally and actually personally. So
yeah, for sure.
I mean, so it could be like something that, you know, I mean, people pull the bob or whatever. I saw when I hiked the Continental Divide Trail, a lot of people had the bobs for the Great Divide Trail.
That's the one wheel trailer that
but it's like, yeah, if you could pull it like a covered wagon, you know, and sleep under it at night, you know.
I have thought about this many times.
Yeah.
There was actually a guy down, I think, near Arcata, and crazyguyonabike.com is that website that collates a bunch of people's, like, trip journals and that sort of thing. But there's a guy there who had some sort of trailer that he hooked up behind a recumbent, and he was carrying, like, 200 pounds of aluminum, I think, just for recycling, cans and bottles and that sort of thing. And he also had constructed like a covered wagon setup where he had a cot in the back and a little mattress. And that was basically like where he slept at night.
Yeah. I think with this new trailer I got, with it being 30 inches wide, I there could be some good sleeping possibilities on that thing. And just put a piece of wood down there. But then when you add that stuff in, I mean, part of my thing with this is trying to, you know, I come from an ultralight backpacking background. I've done the Pacific Crest Trail, and it's like I don't want to carry any more weight than I need, so I've been avoiding, you know, lining my trailer with a big piece of half inch or plywood or whatever. And but I imagine, yeah, if you took your trailer out and put a half-inch piece of plywood and went out camping for the night, that'd be a suitable place to sleep out for the night. But mm-hmm. not for construction type stuff.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm looking at pounds or ounces, you know, and what I'm carrying behind me.
Right, right. And so I would imagine both of you are pound and ounce counters. Just I remember last time you were here, Joshua, you talked about not having to have a full complement of tools with you and not having to bring all of your supplies in a van when you go to a job site, that you can kind of go and come back with whatever you need. How do you, Joshua, and you, Chris, like, how do you guys kind of make that judgment call as far as what you need, what you do want to carry, what you don't want to carry?
Well, I think it's made me a lot better plumber, for one, because I have to think of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, oftentimes I don't, in fact.
Indeed. I know how that goes.
And so I'll end up running, you know, some other place. And of course, at that point, I'm on my own time. But the only frustration I have, and I try to enunciate this for my customers, that just please make all your needs known before I arrive.
Like if you don't want copper or whatever.
Yeah, if there's one thing, yeah, there you go. If there's one thing that you're, you know, oh, just this one more thing, you know, that could make a big difference. You know, I have plenty of, I have lots of materials at my shop, and typically if I'm stopping somewhere to get supplies, you know, it's going to be very specific. And if I'm thrown a curveball, then it can be frustrating for mm-hmm. sure. But yeah, it has made me quite the planner. And Chris and I have had this conversation before.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about load to spec.
Yes.
And it's probably, I always tell people, the hardest part of this job is planning, you know, for what you need. Because I don't have the luxury of, you know, driving around a big utility van with a whole bunch of tools in it.
Right.
And I will say there's been times where I've gotten hosed completely for getting, you know, a crescent wrench or whatever. And,
yeah.
But you know, it's kind of like the redeeming thing that happens is it's like, sometimes I go to the client and just say, you know, I completely forgot a crescent wrench. You don't happen to have one? They're like, oh yeah, no problem. And they're really happy to help out.
Happens to me all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, but I do have a, like a Stanley tool chest that I do try and bring, some extra things that, you know, just in case something happens.
You should always have a crescent wrench, by the way.
Yeah. but I'll tell you, even like a Leatherman, you know, it's like, if you I have a Leatherman with a little saw on it, and I'm like, I can't really tell me how many times I've used that little saw, you know, and
entire 4x4.
Just about. And, but you know, it's like, yeah, I mean, you know, through this drywall here, you know, it's like come in pretty handy where I've had that little saw in the Leatherman. I'm like, you know,
and just kind of edge something out of it.
And cut, yeah, it's a keyhole saw basically, right, yeah. Or a drywall saw just about. And so, you know, multi-use is actually, you know, kind of, again, from the long distance hiking, backpacking thing, mm-hmm. you know, multi-use is really important.
You get resourceful with this though.
Yes, totally, totally. And, But that said, you know, there's the right tools for the job, and you got to plan ahead, and that's very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that could be a problem if you don't have the thing you need.
Yes.
Yeah. So long distance backpacking, you mentioned this. What have you done? The Pacific Crest Trail?
I did the Appalachian Pacific and Continental Divide Trails.
So. Nice. Nice. You've done them all.
Yeah. 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 Well, I mean, there's more to do, but mm-hmm. I'm really geeked about doing this builder by bike thing. So I'm you know, I'm kind of put my long distance hiking career on hold.
Sure.
And focus more on this.
Is that a money making career or just a,
no,
no. Okay. Yeah. I can't think of too many ways to monetize the hiking. Yeah, it's good for your soul, but,
yes,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But there's actually, it's like, you know, paused in my life 3 times and taken 6 months off and quit jobs and just go hike.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it does set you back a little bit, but the right. experiences are worth it. Yeah. For sure.
Brandon, you did like a 2-night backpacking trip recently.
I have no follow-up for that.
I'm just thinking of it. I realized we hadn't. I don't think we've mentioned on the show yet. So, yeah.
Thank you.
You went camping.
I did. Yes. Fucking A. Fucking tight.
Best day ever.
Sorry.
So, as far as like operating a business by bike, and especially one that is traditionally not done by bike, what are some of the challenges that you guys have run up against? What are some of like maybe the hardest things that you've experienced in trying to make this work as a bicycle business or bicycle based business?
Oh, wow. Well, I would say the hardest probably, we just really touched on it is just the planning, mm-hmm. just knowing what you need. And I think also some people have a hard time understanding where you're coming from. They're not, in your shoes. A lot of people, most people are very understanding, mm-hmm. but every once in a while I run into some people and then there's even some who might not realize that, the importance of it, and they don't really, they may not be as environmentally minded. So they're a little bit more critical of the concept in itself.
Like, you could do this with a van. Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And to follow up, I think, we touched on the planning part, which is hard. And people ask me about the weather, and I actually don't mind the weather. Last Friday we got soaked, and I was happy. I was like a kid in a candy store out there working. I was like, yay, rain. I can't say I'm going to be that way all winter long. But
a couple months from now, you can talk to us.
Yeah, I'll be, put a gun to my head.
Exactly.
You kind of remind me of I have a hard time explaining this to my family out east, and they, it's like my mom, it's like I love my mom. She just doesn't get it, mm-hmm. and when it comes to this, and when I was looking for an employee, she's like, why are you excluding anybody who's wants to drive a vehicle or a van? And I'm like, Mom, my business name is Builder by Bike.
just in case you missed it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, I've had other families, a family member lives in Charlotte who just says this would not work in Charlotte, mm-hmm. and perhaps in like suburban areas maybe, but it's like there's still like some old town areas in Kansas City or whatever where there's some good population density that it could happen. It just trying to explain this to people, it's they just don't get it. But so here in Portland, it's great. People do get it.
Right.
And it does, the business does thrive here.
Yeah.
And I think it could thrive in other places too.
It's going to begin to as oil prices keep going up.
Yeah. Well, and I had a contractor, or I've had a couple people, chase me down. And, I had one guy when I was out at Woodcrafters, mm-hmm. said, when gas goes to $5 a gallon, that's what I think I'm going to do.
Right.
You know, and because, it's like some of these people are just, they're doing, some interior finish, finishing with wood. And I mean, it's just small little pieces of, mm-hmm. of trim that they're
finished carpet it doesn't call for that much wood.
Yeah. It doesn't really call for that much. And I'm like loading up just a couple thin pieces, and I have a big chop saw in there. And, a tub of tools, and they're like, wow, and anybody who's experienced enough. And my hope is that someday, Josh and I will be as commonplace as an electrician on a bike or mm-hmm. whatever, in that it's not such a novelty. It's like, this is the way it is. And if gas prices continue to, or gas supplies continue the way they are, and they say we've already hit peak and we're on our way down, and as it, budgets tighten up, I think people are going to be doing this more and more. Mm-hmm. So,
finite resources.
It's necessary. I think of it as, it's not really so radical in the sense of, a species, we need to become far more radical mm-hmm. in our approach if we're going to survive. The whole I mean, since the last our last interview, I mean, I've seen, you know, there's been some monumental events. You know, we've seen Greenland lose a huge portion of its ice, and you know, and just an immense amount of ice loss. We've got methane chimneys in the North Pole. I mean, it's horrible. You know, permafrost is melting. It's very clear. You know, if there's any hope for humanity, then, you know, we need to make some serious radical changes rapidly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for sure.
And you guys are harbingers, how do you pronounce that word? Of that hope and of that, like, inevitability. Like, we're going to, the rest of society will be dragged kicking and screaming and drowning into that, but providing models and learning all the hard lessons now is going to be very useful. So yeah. Open sourcing a conversation like this is great.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, I was watching the Romney Obama, you know, debate, and I get a little political here or anything like that, but they're still talking about price.
Oh, please,
the,
do.
Price at the pump and this, you know, it's like very, very conventional BS that it's
unimaginative.
And they're still talking, and it's like, you know, and they're talking about reviving the economy, and somehow it's always centered about around.
We're going to get 4% growth within 1 year.
Right, right. And it's centered around gas and cheap fuel or whatever. And it's like, you know, I started this business last year and I'm thriving.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got more work than I can handle. And I'm doing it without a car. And you know. You know, there's a revolution that I think is, you know, that can happen with all this. And you know, I don't know. Anyway, the whole gas culture and paradigm, you know, frustrates me. And people can't see that it can be done another way. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be done with a utility ban and you know, $4.50 gas at Shell in somewhere in California or whatever.
Yeah. You know? And like you said, Brandon, it's inspiring to see that this can happen. It can be successful and it can be something that works really well. So that's cool.
Well, I think that's part of the reason Chris and I both did this. Well, to see if it was possible ourselves and then to show the world this is possible.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not just possible to live car free in your daily life. Yeah. But that you could actually run a business and mm-hmm. you know,
and we're kind of latecomers. I mean, there's a guy in London who's been doing this, mm-hmm. you know, for a couple of years. You know, a handyman, you know, general contracting business in London.
Yeah, there's a plumber as well.
Yeah, I mean, so you know, we're a little bit behind on things. I mean, there's other people that are starting to do that have been doing this for a little bit.
In Holland, it's been going on for a long time.
And probably somewhere in Thailand, they've been doing this for 200 years.
Exactly.
Or whatever, you know.
Right. China as well.
Balancing Finnish carpentry on their heads.
Yeah. Chinese bikes, there are some fantastic photos out there. And those aren't even cargo bikes. Those are just like the pigeon. Those are, the flying pigeon? Is that the standard? Yeah. It's what everybody uses. So, well, we're getting up to the end of our time here. We should probably close it out. Where do people find you on the internet?
Well,
the internet.
Oh.
A series of tubes.
The interwebs.
The interwebs and the internets. Anyway, my builderbybike.com just goes to my redirect guide, but I'm actually having Barb Grover from Splendid Cycles actually working on my website. But if you go to Facebook and type in Builder by Bike on a search, that will I have a lot of pictures on there and status updates. I do everything on there right now. So go to Facebook, Builder by Bike.
Excellent. And the rebranded Plumbing by Bike.
Plumbing by Bike is can be found at Google Bicycle Plumber, and you'll see my mug show up quite rapidly, and follow the prompts, and my website appears. I have a new commercial as well.
So. That's right. We've been trying to get the wireless to play nice, so we can actually watch this. We'll probably do that if we wrap the show.
It's sexy. Yeah, from one bike builder to another, it's pretty.
Looking forward to that.
Well, the theme is a group called Mad Rad from Seattle. They've got a song called "Sexy Sexy Bicycle," and that's the theme song of the commercial.
Nice.
And, you know, and part of it was for me, this has been part of my vision is to change the American concept of sexy from, you know, this vehicle, this idea that you've got to have this car and then you're sexy, to, you know, what's actually sexy, which is riding a bicycle, is much more sexy than driving a gas guzzling vehicle.
Yeah, let's see those calves. That's,
we can get on board with that.
That's sexy. Yeah.
This is no fat plumber.
We gotta had to get a picture of that. Well, hey, there's one more thing before we go.
You've got mail.
Aaron Levanche, from Fort Collins, he was out on a bicycle tour. We're going to talk to him in a couple weeks, I think, or possibly more, sometime around Thanksgiving. And he's going to tell us some stories about his tour. But he put the Sprocket Podcast sticker up on a bridge near Big Sur, California. And as you can see, it's right there on, I believe it's a yield sign, or not a yield, it's one of those yellow ones. Anyways, our fame spreads far and wide. So that's good times. And then we also got
a time.
We probably don't have time to play it now, but I will insert this later. There was Jeremy from New York City sent us not just a voicemail, but a recording of his own voice telling us a couple of things that were on his mind.
Different?
So, it's an MP3 and an email. So,
okay.
Thank you, Jeremy, and we'll insert that here.
Hey, Brock and Brandon and all the listeners. This is Jeremy from New York. I was on episode 91, and I thought I would give you a call and comment on one thing that keeps coming up. It's like it's this thorny issue of, you know, bikes and traffic laws and interacting with others. And I sort of go back to my rule number one in life, which is just show some respect for other people and, you know, expect that you should get some respect in return. And you know, of course, the street environment is a little different because your safety becomes sort of a number one priority, and respecting others sort of becomes rule two, if you will. And I know it's problematic because on the streets, you really have this setup where, you know, there's these traffic laws that are supposed to tell you, you know, who's right, who's wrong, who goes now, you do this, and you're not supposed to think about it or stop and be nice or anything like that. It's just, you know, I have green light, I go, and I go fast. I sort of feel like, you know, I wish we could move away from that and just kind of get rid of all these traffic signals and everything and just, you know, everybody just go slow and be nice to each other. And, you know, one of the common issues that comes up here in New York is the people always complaining about is that, you know, it's hard to give respect when you don't get respect, right? So, you know, you're on a bicycle and you're constantly dealing with all kinds of bullshit from car drivers and people using other modes as well. You're dealing with all kinds of crap. And then, you know, then you're going to look at me and you're going to say, oh, yeah, I didn't wait for the red light to turn to green. And it's like, come on, you know, if I respect everybody else by yielding the right of way and then I go, you know, so what? One of your guests made a comment about how cars like to stop and wave bikes on in places. I guess this is a foreign concept to me because I live in the big city where like nobody really wants to ever be nice to anyone else really. So, but that's nice that goes on in Portland. And, I'm glad to hear that. And if somebody waves me on no matter what mode it is, just fucking go. Like, don't like sit there and try to make a statement about that. No, you have the right of way and we need to be consistent, whatever. Like, I'm sorry to whoever said that. I can't remember who it was, but it's just go, man. You know, let it go. Are people good people who are just misinformed, or are people just selfish assholes? And I don't know. My experience riding a bicycle kind of, you know, teaches me the latter. But one thing I have learned is that yelling at somebody or, you know, banging on their car or really whatever, it doesn't make anybody learn anything. Shouting at people doesn't help, even though it might feel good in some instances. And if it makes you feel good, I say do it. Anyway, I'm thinking about my tour starting in the spring, and I hope to make it out to Portland to talk about more of these issues sometime before the summer. So keep up the great work. Talk to you soon.
So, hey, this is the end of the show. Shall we wrap?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, that's it.
Shall I do the credits or shall you?
Oh,
okay.
Cool. I got it. Yeah.
Okay.
This is my last time to do this. Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. That's probably how you found us. Send us feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and or guests or drinks or whatever you feel like by way of an email, thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can call, leave a message, text us, 503-847-9774. Thank you to Ryan J. Lane, as always, for our theme music. He's at myspace.com/RyanJLane.
He's at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com.
Oh, there you go. And thanks to Hurtbird for our headlines. Hurtbirdmusic.com. It's been a good 99 episodes so far.
Yes, it has. I'm Brock. That's Brandon, Chris, and Joshua. We're all saying goodbye. Have a fantastic week, everybody. We have no limitations of any kind. So say whatever you want.
Okay.
Essentially.
No FCC regulations.
That's right.
Excellent.
Nuclear vessels. Check them.
Yeah,
I was looking for a Star Trek joke too.
Anton. Yeah.
Because
they got it.
Yeah. Because I saw that movie after after the Cold War was over, I didn't quite realize the full gravity until later when I grew up and I'm like,
right,
is a Russian guy walking around LA asking for nukes. And you know, that plays actually very well into the politics of the time. It makes it ludicrous, so